Crime, bringing Seattle to the world and the world to Seattle. I'm your host, Lori Ness, a soldier on the front line of the mainstream. You can listen to this and other shows at northwestcrime.com, and be sure to stay with Seattle Wave Radio 24/7, 365 for more great music and interviews. We're starting a movement of kindness, and we want you to join us. Let's get this show started.
Well, my guest today is Blake Lewis, and Blake came in second on American Idol to the winner, Jordan Sparks. But Blake has proved once again that you don't have to win American Idol to be successful. Blake has had continued success since his run on American Idol. His performance on the show of You Give Love a Bad Name has over 3 million views and to this date is one of the most popular performances in American Idol history. So I'm just thrilled to have Blake on. He's from the Seattle area. We're going to catch up with him for a bit today. So thank you, Blake, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So what's been going on with Blake Lewis? Let's catch up. A lot has been going on with Blake Lewis.
Yeah, it's been a you know a very fruitful year. A year since last July, I started working on my new album, which is called Portrait of a Chameleon, and through that, one of my tracks got licensed to a Microsoft commercial. Much love from the Northwest, which is amazing to still have some support and a great community. And since then, people have really responded to the single. I released the single through my record label, which I created, called Audio Daydream Records, off of my first album. From there, it was licensed to Universal Republic, and I've been doing promo tours and, you know, need to see my commercial and song in theaters around the world. And It's kind of been a whirlwind, and currently I'm just trying to finish this album up. I have about 11 songs that I work on about, you know, 3 to 4 days a week when I'm not playing shows.
Yeah, you've just really been experiencing success, maybe not in the big sense that we're used to seeing success, but as far as like flashy in your face all the time, but you have just been going right along, one thing after another, working, making a name for yourself. Everybody knows who you are. You were just teaching Michelle Obama beatbox not very long ago. I mean, you just had just a fantastic career post-Idol.
It's been a long journey, that's for sure. I mean, I started, you know, pursuing music, you know, not just as a hobby, but, you know, as my passion and my career when I was around 18 years old. And, you know, it's been over a decade. And, you know, I get my work ethic from my dad and my talent from my mom. And, you know, I just I work hard as I can, you know, and still have fun doing it. And each year, you know, has its challenges. And this year has been a very creative year, and I'm blessed. I'm very fortunate that I'm allowed to create and communicate my craft.
Are you happy that you still have the association with American Idol? Was that a good experience for you? Or if you had to do over, would you do something different?
Oh, most definitely. No, I will forever be synonymous with American Idol, and that's great. I was at the peak of their show, and, you know, I got to represent myself as true to form as I could on, you know, kind of a, you know, a karaoke show. I was the first, you know, the first people to ever, you know, arrange his own music on that show. And, you know, the fact that I had that liberty and, you know, I guess gusto. I didn't really get along too well with the producers.
Well, yeah, you were really kind of the real original artist that broke out from American Idol. You were kind of off the beaten cookie cutter path, so to speak, with your talent. And still on reality shows today, they kind of, America still kind of goes for that big voice type of thing instead of
And I don't want to say that those people don't have, obviously, because they do have a lot of talent, but it kind of gets to be almost the same type of thing. And you were so far out of that mold that it was refreshing.
Yeah, I was. Well, I'm definitely kind of that out-of-box character. I think being a Northwest kid has a lot to do with that. You know, all my friends up in the Northwest are really creative. You know, there's something about the Northwest. I credit the Northwest for that, for sure. But yeah, I mean, I came into American Idol and kind of looking at it as a remix contest. You know, I'm a producer and you know, I write and arrange my own music. So when I got there, I was definitely scared. I'd never seen the show before, and you know, it was an experience that I'll never forget. You know, I get to if I have, you know, kids and they have kids, I get to tell my grandkids about this. You know, that one time I was on this show. And, you know, it was amazing. I still to this day think I'm like the one person out of, you know, 12 years of seasons now that had the most fun on that show. Because I don't take anything for granted in my life. And that experience was just, it was crazy. It had nothing to do with me, honestly. Like, I think the universe, you know, your God or whoever you believe in, you know, kind of put me in that place in that moment in time. You know, before that I wrote, you know, anti-television commercials and like the aftermath of American Idol. It was a very, you know, surreal and interesting mental time in my life, being off a television show and the success and, you know, instantly that instant fame, which is such a facade, and you know what, you know how many young Americans, you know, just want to be famous, which is really sad in this country. But it was a really hard time for me. I actually got depressed after American Idol because the experience was over, and you know, I didn't know how to get back to who I was before because I was forever changed. So the experience out of the show in general even didn't, I would say that it didn't stop after the curtain closed, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, because there's got to be a certain high that kind of comes with that because they keep you very, very busy during that show. You have a lot of press that you're doing, a lot of PR, you're performing, you're rehearsing. There's a lot that's going on. I mean, you're a part of a huge show process.
It's 24 hours a day, you know. It's crazy. You don't get to go out. Like, I had to actually sneak out to, like, go experience L.A. I've been to L.A. when I was a kid, but, I mean, I've traveled and toured, but I never, you know, living in a city, and here I am thrust in Los Angeles, and not just Los Angeles, but Hollywood, and, you know, you have these, you know, assumptions that everything's cool here and, you know, all this stuff when, in fact, it's just, you know, Hollywood's definitely a facade of entertainment, and then, you know, you got your Spider-Man on Hollywood Boulevard, and then you got your crackheads, and you got it's definitely a town filled with sharks, and, you know, you either sink or swim, and, you know, I stood my ground, and I immediately peaced out. I went back to the Northwest immediately, and because I wanted to be in Los Angeles on my own terms, and American Idol wasn't that. So, you know, I came back and started producing more and got back to being me outside of the, you know, the limelight. And, you know, for some people that's great, for others not, you know, for me, you know, mind, body, and soul, I had to get away from all that stuff because it's not stuff that I care about. I care about, you know, being me and creating my music and, you know, wanting people to hear what I have to say.
I can certainly understand that. Because you want to kind of get back in touch. I can totally see how you could lose yourself through that Idol experience because not only are you thrust into super limelight at that time, you were on the biggest show ever. There was nothing like it. It was at the height of its fame. And there, you know, it's a completely, for people who don't understand, it's a completely, I mean, it's like you have been zapped from one world into a completely foreign world, and you have to adjust to it.
Definitely taking adjustments. You know, me, I'm really bad at biting my tongue, and, you know, I thought I had a thick skin, and, you know, and then that happened, and it, like, completely, you have to have a different outlook, and you really have to watch what you do. Like, little quirks that I have that, you know, make me who I am are all of a sudden in the spotlight, and they're not the best quirks to have in the spotlight, you know. So you really have to have a thick skin, and I'm even learning, I mean, even now, I mean, right now I'm, you know, last week I was tested with, you know, friends and relationships and evil people on the internet just bashing me for stuff I did like 8 years ago. And that's like, well, I'm not that same person that I was. So it's just, it's weird what's out there. You know, you really have to stick to your guns and be true to yourself and be positive. And I live my life in a super positive manner, and I'm super healthy now. And, life's great, you know. I'm at a better place now than I was even, you know, when I was on television.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to keep a lot of your friends that were pre-Idol, post-Idol, or did your friends change because of what happened to you?
The people on the show, yes, I've definitely remained friends with, but, you know, coming back to Washington was definitely hard, you know, because people assume things and people already have an assumption made and judgments. You know, here I'm on the biggest show in the world and it's all about getting judged. So, mm-hmm. you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt and, you know, like I said, just be true to yourself and your real friends will shine and the other ones will fade, you know. And I definitely, you know, being in Washington and playing almost every venue and every show and every high school and, I mean, I've before American Idol, probably played, you know, close to 500 to 700 shows just in Washington alone, with my a cappella group and hip-hop group that I was in and rave scene and everything. So, you know, everyone has their assumptions of who you are and who, you know, the expectations of who you are. And that's the catch-22 and, you know, having relationships with people after that kind of fame and, you know, you really have to look out for your best interests and, you know, the good people will always come through. But then again, there's also the bottom feeders and the people that you thought were friends, but they're just looking to get theirs, you know?
Right.
And, well, you know, and that's not so much in Washington. I see that honestly more here being in LA, to be honest.
Right. Anyone who has any experience with the human population knows that, I mean, that's just, you just go through that in life, unfortunately. You know, it's a constant weeding out, you know, process. You know, there's people come into your life for a season, you know, and sometimes that season's longer for some than others. But sometimes I just got to go bye-bye, you know. So
yeah, but what's been really nice is I think my music, because this ad and people have really responded, and this song's more of a testament of who I am. Even it's just a fun song. It's just a fun kind of love song, and the guy trying to get the girl, you know. And but you know, it was just a collaborative effort. It's me and my friend Matt, and we made it, and you know, couldn't be more proud of anything musically that I've come out with. My first album was great. My second album was more heartbreak and this, but this album is more positive. It's more, you know, feel good and anthemic and, you know, about coming out of the dark and into the light, you know, because my message has always been about, you know, unity and, you know, the power of creation, you know, and, if you're going to, you know, go out there and be a role model after, you know, this kind of, you know, people look up to me just because I was on this television show and, you know, because I was going out there and being myself, you know, so how can I use that for good? And, you know, my best way is my voice and my music.
Right, yeah, you will forever be changed because of that, and you will always have a voice. Because of being on American Idol, it'll always lend itself. And we're going to play your touch a little bit later here in the show so that people can hear it. And it's available right now on iTunes.
Awesome. Yes, and Amazon.com too.
Yes, and I want to tell everyone that they can go to your website, which is BlakeLewisOfficial.com, and they can keep up with you and hear all the music that's going on. Mm-hmm. We talked about kind of some of the negative things. what has been some of the great positive things that have happened to you since then? I mean, you've had a lot of experiences that the people probably, most people would never have in their lifetime. Can you share some of those with us, some of those that stick out in your mind?
Oh, man, I've had so many, yeah, definitely lots of positive. I got to write a song with one of my idols for this album. I got to teach many people how to beatbox, and that's always fun for me, just because, I was always just a weird kid, and it was a subconscious thing, and when it became conscious, I had students, but I got to, teach Michelle Obama how to beatbox. I got to teach, The View. I was on The View a while ago, and got to do that, and Ellen, and all these, cool people, and be around, got to have a, almost a two-hour conversation with Quincy Jones about music and Seattle and him, going to Garfield and all these crazy things and, people we've played with, I'm like, oh, wow, that's my friend. He's like, oh, I played with him, a while ago. And mentors and people, come into your life and really are, inspiring. And I get inspired every day, and I have just, great, positive people around me all the time. So, but experiences like me, I love the stage is where I was destined to be. Right now I'm working on the album. That's great. And I'm having a great time doing it. I love creating. And it's such a meticulous thing. And especially me, I hear everything in, stereo. And I want everything to be perfect for the album. So when I go play it live, I can, have my freedom to do how I want live. It's nice to have this album and package. It's almost like a business card nowadays. It's like, here's my album, here's my business card,
right.
Like it come to a show,
right.
Right,
absolutely.
Yeah, but I've got to travel a lot. That's the blessing is I'm touring to Germany, and they love, my music out there, and I get to go meet new people and people that want to connect, and all these other beatboxers around the world. Like, the best beatboxers are outside of the U.S. I mean, there's some amazing ones in the U.S., but outside of, America, people embrace art more than they do here. And that is such a small community, and YouTube has really changed that. And now there's, the French and the Germans and the Japanese, they're all coming together, and, it's pretty amazing to see. And these little kids and girl beatboxers that are just killing it, and that's amazing for me to see, because it's a very small community, and I've always been a part of small communities, and, a cappella music, small, electronic music was, it's always kind of been big, but it's always kind of been small in America. And now it's, everyone's like, dance music, dance music, dance music, which is amazing, because my friends have, I've been into dance music for almost 20 years. And, all my friends are these big producers that are now, it's coming full circle. Now they're, producing Kesha and, and remixing all these people. So it's pretty a great time for music right now, and especially independent music. And Seattle's always been amazing.
Well, there's really never been
that.
A better time. There's never been a better time for independent music than right now.
Yes, definitely for people seeing it and experiencing it, and, if they want to be a part of, an artist's, life and career, it's more accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we saw that with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. They were able to have tremendous success without a label behind them for a long time, and Alan Stone the same thing, and all fantastic talent. I mean, I've always said, the northwest of Seattle area is like shooting fish in the barrel for talent. There's just something in the water up here. I think we have just some of the best talent in the world, and happy to share it.
So
I am
much.
So glad when people are able to, that the world is able to tap into what we already know is going on in, in Seattle with all of this amazing, amazing talent. And I just think it's great. I just feel like we're taking over the world.
Yeah,
one
I
artist
do too.
At a time.
Yes, well, yeah. Man, there's so much good music in Washington. It's crazy, and I miss being home, because literally there's just all the friends and people you meet along the way, and the community of musicians in Washington is just fantastic, and they really embrace each other, and they play on each other's albums, and you know, I don't get a sense of community being out here in Los Angeles, and it's kind of really sad, you know, like not knowing your neighbors, because being from the Northwest, I was raised that way, you know, just really like actually going next door and being like, hey, what's going on, you know, like, and
no, you're right. It's absolutely like that. I've had Alan Stone on the show. Alan Stone played on Ben Haggerty of album, The Heist, McElbone Ryan List. Andrew Joslin was over there on that. And then they're all over to Alan's music. And I mean, it is, and everybody just gets along so well. You know, I'm sure people can call in and tell me stories where someone didn't get along. But on average, everyone really does get along. And like you said, they're all helping. They're all collaborating on other albums. It is magical to really watch it.
It is. It really is. And it's just, you know, gives me hope and inspires me, you know, to keep doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, invite, you know, because music is a collaborative thing. It's people trying to express themselves, and, you know, that person wants to express themselves, and they get together, and, you know, it's just all great. I love it.
Well, you also have a passion I wanted to kind of talk about of a lost or a dying art, a lost art of the record store. And you've really been a supporter of trying to help record stores out. And there's just, you know, last year the best record store in America, and this just cracks me up, was Starbucks. And that's pretty sad when Starbucks becomes the place that everybody thinks is the best record store in America. Because what do they sell?
It's not a record store. It's a coffee shop.
It's a coffee shop. I know. It's horrible. Can you believe it?
And it's just okay coffee. Well, you know, I mean, that's consumerism. And, I mean, I can go on for days about this stuff. But, yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I do like about living in L.A. There's tons of record stores here, and I go to them all the time. But, no, I mean, my album, Heartbreak on Vinyl, and just the single Heartbreak on Vinyl was about Easy Street. And, you know, I mean, growing up in Northwest, like Silver Platters and Platinum and, you know, oh, man, I miss those days. You know, I mean, I was the 80s kid, you know, I loved records. I was, you know, that was my treat from, you know, my parents was, you know. Here's new vinyl, you know what I mean? Before tapes came out, and then it was all over, and then I had a tape player and a, you know, Walkman, and then it was more, you know, personalized, and, you know, I could go outside and run around and, you know, listen to music, so. But, you know, the record store is just, it's sad, you know. I'm a huge, huge, huge collector, and, I just, you know, it was a sad day. I just actually just recently, like, pretty much uploaded all of my CDs and everything. But I still listen to my vinyl. When I cook, I put a record on and I cook, and that's kind of like my thing, you know. That's when I'm, you know, or I'll have, like, a vinyl party, and my friends will come over, and we'll just listen to vinyl, and everyone will pick, like, an album. We'll have, like, a little dance party at the house. It's fun, you know. There's something special, very special, and, you know. There's just
what
a connection.
What album would we be surprised to know that you own?
Surprised? Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's
like,
a tough question. I mean, I have
mine, that I own the Bay City Rollers vinyl album.
Yeah.
I mean, now I'm telling you how old I am.
S-A-T-U-R-G-A-Y.
I love that. That's a fantastic. I mean, it's so catchy. I love it.
Oh, wow.
I don't know whatever happened to them. I should look them up.
I got some crazy limited edition stuff. I have some signed vinyl by I got a Bono signed my Unforgettable Fire, and he crossed out Fire and put Blake. So that's hanging on my wall.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, that was the fortunate, you know, and so blessed to meet these people that have inspired me since I was a kid, being on American Idol, and I was the only person I brought like 50 pieces of vinyl of all the people that I thought I would meet, and I got two of them signed. So,
wait,
I was that kid.
That's
I actually brought vinyl with me.
Got.
I brought vinyl with me too, American. so that's how much I love vinyl. What's a surprising one? I don't know. Nothing surprising to me. You know, I like what I like. I hear a song, I like it. But you know, I used to be so snobby when it comes to music, but I'm just like, I don't criticize or judge anyone on their taste because you like what you like, and you know, no one has the right to judge you on that, honestly. And I like tons of different music, but a surprising vinyl, man, I have some kind of crazy classical vinyl. Just crazy. I mean, I can't even, like Bach and Chopin and like, you know, I have so much. I have, you know, Ella Fitzgerald, Benny Goodman, you know, Cab Calloway, and 45s, you know. I used to, like, all my presents used to be vinyl when it was, like, my birthday and Christmas. You know, I'd always get, like, a couple pieces, and fans have always been so good to me, like, just sending me, like, 45s. And, you know, I don't know if I have any surprising things. I have an old, weird, like, Cheech and Chong sampled record that's called Up Bustle. Up Bustle and Out, which was on Ninja Tune a long time ago. And that one was a surprising find for me because I bought this, like, stack of, like, 70 to 100 vinyl when this record store was closing, which was sad. But, you know, at the same time, I got about 100 pieces of vinyl for, like, 30 bucks. I was kind of excited about it. So that was the surprising find out of that. Like, I put it on, and it was, like, one of my favorite records for, like, a year. And every time I was just hanging out doing, like, it was one of those, like, kind of instrumental 70s funk records that, you know, doesn't really have any vocals. But all the vocals on it that were Cheech and Chong samples, and they were hilarious. So I guess that's my surprising vinyl.
I bet that would be good. I have Steve Martin's Wild and Crazy Guy album. that is just a classic. In fact, it really needs to be come back out into the forefront again because that thing was just genius. At that time, he did King Tut, I think, on that as well.
That was his biggest album, right? That was the second highest selling comedy record of all time. I mean, I think it was the first thing that could beat him out.
It's hilarious. It was so funny. I'm laughing. I'm thinking about it right now. There are some great things out there that really should be rediscovered because, you know, it's classic. It's just absolutely classic for a reason. I'm sure you get asked a lot by kids, especially, you know, you're talking about a lot of the kids who are beatboxing now who are young kids, young girls, young boys who are doing this, and they're asking you for advice. What kind of advice have you been giving them about the future of beatboxing or how to get into the business? Or what seems to be the message that they're asking from you?
Well, for me, I get those questions a lot, and for me it's always about listening as a musician. Like, the greater you are at listening and just communication, and that goes with everything. It doesn't have to go with music, but just communication and listening is, you know, I'd even say more than 50% of the whole thing, and really listening and soaking up different percussion, and as far as when it comes to beatboxing, different drummers and different bands, and really listen to the drums and see what the pattern is, because, you know, drumming is just all patterns, and, you know, with the mouth, it's all phonetics. And, you know, I grew up, I went to WOMAD when it was in Redmond, and I got to, you know, experience tube and throat singing, and that was, that changed my outlook on the human voice, you know, for world beat and, you know, Indian music and South African and all the, you know, the polyrhythms and all this and crazy things. So far as beatboxing, the best is, I mean, the internet, you know, it's a powerful source of information when you're looking for the right things. And for as beatboxing, I tell them to check out Beatbox Battle Network. There's just so many people out there doing tutorials and so many people that are just fantastic and they just started, you know, like there's so many good beatboxers out there. It's just impressive. And, you know, and I'm good to a certain point. I have my things that I like. So when I teach, I'm like, it's all trying to hear that person and, you know, really seeing what works best for that you know, that voice, you know, just as a vocal teacher would find the best qualities of and tones of a singer, I try and do the same thing with a beatboxer.
Mm-hmm. Now, before I let you go, I have to ask you, because people are asking me, and I got to ask you, what was Simon really like? You've probably been asked this question a million times, but people still want to hear it. They want to know if he is, you know, just as cranky as he appears on TV.
Well, yeah, he's playing his part for sure. You know, he got paid, you know, millions of dollars to play that part. But he was nice to me outside of the show. But honestly, we only got to see them maybe Simon and, you know, Ryan outside of the show. Well, we got to see Ryan a little more because he was always doing interviews and work. And he had a lot more of a job to do on that show than Simon. They kind of just showed up and judged, you know. But he was nice to me, and, you know, he was an advocate for me on the show, which was great. Randy, I knew a lot more, and after the show, we were in the same studio at Henson Studios working on our album, so I actually got to see Randy after the show, and we were, like, critiquing each other's music, and, you know, and that was really cool. And you know, I was on the season where Paula was there, and it was, you know, she was actually the nicest, and she would actually come backstage before the show and wish us luck, and after the show, you know, would come say goodbye, and she was the only one. She was actually the most thoughtful person on that show.
Mm-hmm.
As much criticizing she got, you know, for being on that show.
Right.
I go to her defense all day.
Right, yeah. Well, she does come across as a very warm and caring human.
She definitely is. She was a sweetheart, and Randy was awesome, and we had also had mutual friends, and actually in Seattle, and you know, it was nice coming on that show and being around another musician, and the band was awesome, and you know, but Simon, he was Simon.
Well, you know, I don't think you could play that character unless there was some truth to it, for sure, you know, and I think he's, you know, kept that persona, and it's done very well for him, been very lucrative for him throughout his career as well. But, you know, he actually does know what he's talking about. You know, I think if people watch the polls, most of the time they did agree with what he had to say, so he is very knowledgeable.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a straight-up go to work business guy. Like he's got it on lock, and you know, it was very apparent. And he was there. I mean, American Idol was business for him. He showed up, he did his thing. We there was two times where we got to like party with everybody and, you know, have drinks and actually have a real conversation with those people, but it was very short lived, and you know, that was it. You know, I got put on a television show. It was in its sixth year, and it was like clockwork. Like, people, there was, you know, the only people I got to really, you know, bond with were my contestants, some of the producers that actually make it run, and the musicians, you know, the people in the band, and Ricky Minor and Teddy Campbell, the drummer, which, you know, I you know, got to battle on the show, which was really fun, and, you know, those were the experiences and the people that I love coming off that show.
Which contestants have you kept up with?
Oh, a lot of them. My good buddy Chris Richardson and I, which is, it's crazy, it's kind of full circle. He comes here to L.A. to write, and we're kind of on the same record label. He's signed to Cash Money, and you know, I'm signed to Universal Republic, and then they're both through Universal, so it, you know, we're meeting the same people now and kind of doing the same kind of promo tours and, you know, promoting our music, and he's one of my best friends, and he was on the show, and he, you know, forever will be. And my buddy Chris Sly just moved to LA, and so we just reconnected, and you know, when I'm in Chicago, I see my friend Gina Glockson. When I'm in Vegas, I see my friend Haley, and when Jordan's in LA, I'll connect with her on occasion, or we might show up at the same event, you know. But I definitely stay connected, for sure. And actually, I live with my good buddy Elliot Yamin, who actually was the season before me.
I'm his roommate.
He's
going to be on the show on Monday.
Is he really?
Monday, yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah, he's been one of my best pals here, and Brandon Rogers, who was on my season as well. They're like two of my best friends here in LA. But yeah, I live in Elliot's house, and we did like a last year. We did a show for almost 2 months in Branson, Missouri, of all places, and we did this kind of idol theater kind of show, and it was really fun, and we'd been friends for the last 3 years, and he, you know, kept texting me, like, because he was just in his house by himself, and he's got a big house, and he knows how much equipment I have. He's like, you should just move in here. And I got robbed, like, I got robbed by a crackhead where I was living before, and so I was like, yes, so get me out of this area. So it's been great. We've been in his roomie for, 8 or 9 months now, and it's a good time.
I hate when musicians' equipment gets – that is my pet peeve. I hate that. It happens all the time. You know, it's always a huge thing that goes out on social media when bands' equipment gets stolen, and it just ticks me off every time because it's so expensive. They've put everything they have into that equipment. They don't have anything else most of the time except for that equipment, you know. And
it
it's their whole life. It is heartbreaking. I hate that when that happens, and I'm so sorry that that happened to you.
It's okay. Even if just someone, it's just it's violating, and you never know how you're going to feel. And my other roommate and I, and then that whole week we were just like at each other's throats for no reason, just because we got violated by someone else. And it was just it was a learning experience. I'd never been, you know, robbed before. And it was a big ordeal, and I'm glad it's over. And now I got a great roommate, and yeah. And we live in a better area. The area I was living before was just not the best area.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's because that always ticks me up. Because for most musicians, they're like a small business, and when their equipment gets stolen, that's their whole business has just left. Everything they've, you know, saved and planned and worked for gets stolen, and that's their business, that's their income, that's their moneymaker. And it happens so often, and don't even get me started on that, because I could just rant and rave about that forever too. But people, do not steal a musician's equipment, because you're not stealing from people. It's not like Robin Hood, where you're stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. No, these are working people who need this stuff, you know. I don't condone stealing in any, but you know, it just breaks my heart for musicians, because I know how hard that they work. I know how expensive equipment is, and what they've had to do to get that equipment. So
yeah, I definitely agree. I've made precautions now. I mean, I literally, like, 3 weeks ago took pictures of every single thing I own, every model number. It took like 2 weeks to get everything filed and for insurance and everything, and they caught the guy. A cop came by a year later, and it's like, I did the lineup, and my roommate and I did the lineup, my other roommate, and it was very interesting. It was, I wish no one would go through anything, evil or negative, but fortunately, there's those kind of people in the world, and we just got to stay positive and keep fighting the good fight.
And that's why we have music, because, you know, musicians are so great about tuning out the negative for us and bringing in that wonderful energy of music and restoring our souls. And so I certainly appreciate you being a part of that restoration process for all of us, because who aren't musicians, that there's wonderful people out like you out there who are doing it and bringing it to us all the time. I want people to go to BlakeLewisOfficial.com. I want them to download your new music. They can get it on iTunes. They can hook up through your website. And we're going to play Your Touch, which is from your upcoming album. Can you tell us just a little bit more about that song?
Yeah, this was one of those songs in the studio that it just – happened, and you know, you strike where the iron's hot. It definitely went through some production, some phases in the production. When I first wrote it, it kind of sounded like the XX. Like if you hear in the second verse, it's kind of got this like indie little bass line that comes through, and the whole song I wrote like that. And then I was like, wait, this isn't my sound. I'm not trying to be, you know, the XX. So this whole album and the song was about really finding my sound and using beatbox as a foundation. And I made a huge sample library of all my sounds, like, you know, and we programmed a lot of the sounds on the album and in that song. But the song is, it's just kind of like, I was that guy always like, you know, daydreaming, wishing I could get that girl that I liked and not having the guts to, you know, go up to her. I've never been that guy that's like, you know, was in the bar and asking a girl for a number. I always thought that was just kind of weird. And, I don't like that, that dating, that whole, just that, the approach. I've never been good at the approach, you know? And, so this song is about that. It's about, you know, the guy finally getting the confidence and, you know, saying, hey, let's make it happen.
All right.
It's kind of
well,
a dream. It's a moody, sexy, dreamy song, you know. You know, it's you know, the opening verses, I've been writing you the story, a headline reads, we're meant to be, kind of, you know, I'm kind of visual with my songs, so when I'm trying to paint a picture, and with this album, I'm doing that so very much with this, you know. So I hope people like it and
well,
they
I
respond
it.
To it. Oh, thank
well,
you so
I added
much.
It to my personal playlist because I enjoyed it so much. I'm looking forward to the album coming out. Thanks, Blake, for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. It's a great day for music and a great day for Northwest music, and we just continue to wish you nothing but the best success.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm actually heading up to Tacoma to play the Pride, actually, on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm excited to... come home this weekend and see friends and family and, you know, soak up the Seattle sun because I hear it's been really nice there.
It's been really hot, you know, and that heat wave kind of broke, though, and so it's right where temps should be for July. This is absolutely beautiful. The sky is clear. There's no smog in the air, as you would know that there is in L.A., and you can just see for miles, and it's beautiful. And not only do we want you to come home and experience what's going on in Seattle, but we invite everybody to come to Seattle and enjoy what's going on here because it is really as magical. It's a great time to be in Seattle. There's fantastic music, fantastic food. There's just a great energy going on, and it doesn't really get any better. We want everybody to come and experience what we already know is going on here in Seattle. Get down to Pike Market. There's fantastic things going on down there at Pike Market.
Yeah.
I always love to go to Pike Market. It's great energy
I
down
tell
there
everyone.
As well.
I tell everyone to come to Washington. And every time anyone's like, I've always wanted to go. And I was like, make it happen, you know. Or everyone has some, like, you know, like, it's always overcast. I'm like, no, it's not, you know. You just, and I've had so many people that have gone up there, like, I had the best time in Washington.
Exactly. That's right. You always leave a little piece of yourself in Seattle if you have to leave. But, you know, no, I mean, we've had, it was last year we went, you know, in fact, we everybody in Seattle was tweeting this out because it was a big deal for us. We went like 47 days with, you know, it was like no rain, no nothing, just sunny skies. And everybody was always shocked, you know, they're like, wow. I'm like, it happens. I mean, today, it's absolutely beautiful. The sun is shining, the Ferris wheel's spinning. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just magical. It's just a great time. So have a great time coming back. I know
Thank
you,
you
will. And
I
we
definitely
just,
will.
And we want everyone to come and experience what we are experiencing here. So BlakeLewisOfficial.com, stay with him and support great and talented people who are doing wonderful things in the world like Blake Lewis. Thanks, Blake, for
Thank
coming
you
on.
So much. Thank you for having
All
me.
All right. My pleasure. Bye-bye. All right, that was Lewis, and we're going to play out with his song, his new song, Your Touch. So get over there to iTunes or over to his website, BlakeLewisOfficial.com, and support this talented kid. He is just really doing everything he can do to put out great music, and he's very accomplished. He's putting out a great product. It doesn't cost hardly anything to download a wonderful song to your playlist. And we encourage you to do that and support him today. Thank you for listening. We will be back with Elliot Yem and his roommate that we were just talking about on Monday. And I also have the director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, going to come on next week, and we're going to be talking about homelessness and family homelessness, what the Gates Foundation is doing to assist in that issue, and what we can do as ordinary folk to assist in that issue. We're going to go out today. Blake Lewis, your touch. Thanks for joining us.
I've been writing you a story. The headline reads, "We're meant to be." See, I'm not one to write such fiction. So let me be. And I should roll the dice, tossed and not forever. Cause I'm feeling intoxicated.
Make the headlines beat tonight.
Don't call me,